Amen. Jeremiah chapter 5, if you're with me. Did everybody that has an interest, and I'll say this in the morning service, that has an interest in going with me to Rome and Israel and Egypt in May, June, did you all see the email that I sent out as a Parsons Post and the attachment with the directions on if you want to go on how to get your deposit? Anybody not see that that's interested? I'll say that again in the morning service. So anyway, I put up, we've already, 30 of the 50 spaces are already taken with deposits, and because it would just went, there's an appetite to do this from a lot of people, and nobody's going on vacations for a couple of years. I think that's a part of it too. I just put up on Facebook what I was doing, and I've now sent out, I've got two more people that wrote me. I have 24 people that have requested information on it. So most of those are couples, so you can double that number. So I think there's going to be more people that are interested in going than we can fit. So I'm encouraging, if that's of interest to you, put your deposit in, and then you can withdraw the deposit by the 1st of October with no penalty. And it gives you a month to think about it. But if you are interested, please follow that immediately and do that. And I'll say that again in the morning service. Okay, Jeremiah chapter 5. We know this Jeremiah is still prophesying. Josiah is about 23. Josiah has been the king for 10, 12, 14 years. Remember, they have not found the book of the law yet. The book of the law will not be found for a couple more years. It is in the temple. But the temple is being used as a brothel. It's a den of prostitution. So if you can imagine, I'll show you a picture of Herod's temple in the morning service that was built on top of Solomon's temple. Solomon's temple was much smaller than Herod's temple. The Temple Mount area, Herod greatly enlarged by filling in a valley and creating, like you would with dirt, like filling in a whole valley with dirt and then building hundreds of arches. So underneath that Temple Mount that we're going to see in the sermon picture today is actually underneath that used to be a valley. And Herod filled that valley in. This will be 600 years in the future from Jeremiah. And he built it with a series of Roman arches to support 75 to 100,000 people could gather on Herod's Temple Mount area. What's amazing is, as I've taught you out of Ezekiel, that the temple in Christ in the millennium that Ezekiel envisions is actually five times bigger than Herod's temple. So that temple that you see in this picture today and where the Dome of the Rock is today, the Muslim mosque, it's actually going to be enlarged by five times that during the millennium. It's a much larger place. And when you think that Ezekiel made that prophecy from Babylon in the middle of captivity, when there's only 40 or 50,000 Jews left alive out of the millions that had been living even 100 years before, and for Ezekiel to say, you remember Solomon's temple? Because they hadn't seen Herod's yet. That won't be built for 600 more years. He's basically telling them, the Solomon's temple that you saw so great, one day when the Messiah comes, his temple will be 20 times bigger than that. Because Herod's temple is much bigger than Solomon's temple. The millennial temple is much bigger than Herod's temple. And Ezekiel gives them a very specific size to the what we would know as the millennial temple or Messiah's temple. So just giving you a little bit of a background on reminding us where we are. Jeremiah does not have a Bible. I mean, you stop and think. I just said to you all, open to Jeremiah 5, right? Jeremiah, Josiah, they have no Bible. It's in a closet, in a basement, in a hidden away in this temple that's basically used just for immorality and Baal worship. And they won't find the Bible for another 2 or 3 years. And yet it's oral tradition. Remember, you've had 55 years of Manasseh and you had 2 years of Ammon. So you've had 57 years before Josiah as a child comes on the throne, and there had been no sacrifices, there had been no temple worship. The temple is a prostitution den. I mean, it would be like if we turned every church in America into a prostitution. I mean, this is, when we think about, oh, we say, oh, America, the status of spirituality in America is horrible. Let me just clue you in. We all have a Bible. They didn't have a Bible. Their places of worship were places of sexual immorality. We have places of worship. I mean, when you stop and think about how bad it was, and yet God is going to give them Jeremiah Ezekiel, Josiah, Habakkuk. He's going to give them a list of prophets and a godly king in their last 30 years to say, here's your one more chance. So as I've talked about, you know, I don't know when God's judgment falls on America or if God is gracious to us and send revival. But remember, Habakkuk says in the same time period, he says, O Lord, in judgment, remember mercy. And that is a great prayer for America today because Habakkuk is a contemporary of Jeremiah. And he says, revive your work. You remember the text in Habakkuk? Revive your work, O Lord, in judgment, remember mercy. And the mercy that God answers Habakkuk's prayer is he gives them Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and he gives them Josiah, and Josiah reigns for 30 years. But what happens when Josiah dies is it really reveals where the people's heart is because they just turn immediately out of the way. So that's our background. This prophecy is probably about 621, 622 BC. So to put it in your mind, Josiah is going to die in 609 at Megiddo fighting Pharaoh. So in northern Israel, Armageddon, the Valley of Armageddon, that's where Josiah dies. The same battlefield where Christ will defeat the Antichrist at the end of the tribulation. It's on that same field that Josiah dies. And Pharaoh destroys him as Pharaoh is going north to fight the Babylonians. The Babylonians then defeat Pharaoh, northern Iraq, at the Battle of Carchemish in 609. He retreats back out of northern Syria, northern Iraq, and he installs a pro-Egypt puppet king in Judah. And in 605, 4 years later, Nebuchadnezzar is going to come, rip that king off the throne and put his own Babylonian puppet king. And over the next years, they go back and forth until 586 when the Babylonians come and wipe out Israel, wipe out Judah. They go back and forth with Egyptians coming and putting a puppet king in or someone more favorable to them, and the Babylonians come back in 597. So 605 is when Daniel goes to Babylon. 597 is when Ezekiel goes to Babylon. 586 is when the last remnant goes to Babylon. Okay, so I know I've told you that before, but I tell it to you again because you have a couple of other important things in your life to do between Sunday school classes. I get that. So here's where we are, 621, Jeremiah 5. Run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. See now and know, and seek in her open places. So he's going, go through the whole city of Jerusalem. Remember, Jeremiah grew up at Anoth. Anoth is about 3 to 5 miles north of Jerusalem. So it's not a very long walk for Jeremiah to walk down to Jerusalem. He says, if you can find a man, if there is anyone who executes judgment, who seeks the truth, then I will pardon her. Now take a step back and think of the same kind of dialogue 400 years before when the angel of the Lord comes to Abraham. Do you remember that dialogue about Sodom? And by this time, Lot has, he pitched his tent to Sodom, and then he's in Sodom when the enemy comes and takes them captive, and Abraham has to save them. And then by this time in that story, he's sitting in the gates. When the angels come to destroy Sodom, Lot is sitting in the gate, which means Lot has become a leader of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sitting in the gate, he's on the city council, as it were. And you remember in that whole discussion, Abraham says, well, Lord, if there's 50, if there's 45, if there's 40, and he gets down to 10. And you'd have to go with me and maybe in Dicker in a Middle Eastern bazaar in the old city to understand what's going on in that story. But it's Middle Eastern dickering. I mean, it's like Abraham is counting in his head. He goes, okay, if I can get the Lord down to 10, there's Lot and his wife. He has two daughters that are married, and he has two unmarried daughters. So, Noah kept his family safe. Stop and think. Are you thinking biblically? Noah had three sons and three daughters, Noah was able to save his family, right? I would imagine Abraham is thinking, okay, there's eight, and if they even influence two other people, I mean, this is an easy... You know, this is really easy. If they influence, there'll be 10 righteous people will you save it? And the Lord says, yeah, if there's 10 righteous people, well, we know the story, right? There's like, Lot is the only righteous person, right? I mean, we know in the New Testament that he vexed his soul with the wickedness because his own daughters get him drunk and are immoral with him. That's how we have two nations, the Ammonites and the Moabites, right? So they are the product of incest. The wife turns her head back and turns into a pillar of salt. The two daughters and son-in-laws, they laugh at him. So literally, not only did Lot wasn't an effective witness, he wasn't even like Noah and save his own family. Wow. But part of that was because Lot took his family and stuck them in the middle of Sodom so that he could be financially comfortable. Because remember, when he and Abraham divided up, Abraham could have said, I go first, I'm the oldest. He let Lot go first. And Lot said, well, I'll take the plain down there that's really well watered. My flocks, and you can get this hill country and with the scrubby little grass and the rocks and your lambs won't be as fat and your sheep won't be as fat because mine will have better grazing. And I will, he sacrificed his family for financial benefit. Who would you rather be, Abraham or Lot, in hindsight? Never sacrifice your family for finances. It's a horrible return on investment. It's a horrible return on investment. Well, Jeremiah, God says to Jeremiah, can you find just one? Not ten, one. Now, different scholars look at this text and say, was God speaking a little bit in hyperbole? Because Josiah was living in Jerusalem, and Josiah was a godly king. Ezekiel was in Jerusalem, So there might be a little bit of hyperbole in like saying, you know, forgive 70 times 7. In other words, that's a euphemism for an innumerable number. Because if you counted, okay, I have forgiven you 489 times, you have one left, and then I don't have to forgive you. Well, you really haven't forgiven, have you? I mean, if you count up to 490, you're not doing much of forgiving if you're counting. So it can be a number that is in their culture, which is signifying they're just as nobody. He says, if there's anyone who executes judgment, who seeks truth, I will pardon her, though they say, as the Lord lives. So in other words, they used a common, when, you know, okay, so we know how this is. How many of you use the phrase, because I do, my mom, I copy my mom. How many use the phrase, bless her heart? Anybody use that phrase? Bless his heart. And then what you mean by that is you're about to say something not kind after you bless her heart. You know, bless her heart, she's just got limited mental capabilities, you know. Bless her heart, bless his heart, you know. So it's kind of a euphemism. Well, they use as the Lord lives as a euphemism. They would use it in a contract. Ah, as the Lord lives, I swear to do this. And what's interesting is you see in the text that the word Lord is in all caps. So there are different styles the King James will use. And of course, I'm using the New King James. But King James will use to tell you there are many, many, many different names for God in the Old Testament that will be translated Lord. So the one that's, you can have capital L, little o, little r, little d, and it can be Adonai, which means master. It can be Lord Jehovah Shalom, which means God is my peace, and we'll translate it Lord. They'll all be translated Lord, but in the Hebrew it can be Jehovah Sitkanu, it can be Jehovah Shalom, it can be Jehovah Rapha, he who provides. So the word in the Hebrew will tell you the characteristic of God that the author is trying to convey. Except for one instance, and that's here. So here it's capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, and this is Yahweh, what we would call Yahweh. And this is the covenantal name of God. In other words, this is the God who cannot lie. This is the covenant with Israel God. And what the scribes would do when they copied this is they would have a pen, they would come to this name. Yahweh, and they would lay their pin down, and they would ritually bathe. Then they would pick up a different pin and write Yahweh. They would put that pin down, throw it away, ritually bathe, pick up a third pin, and then continue copying. Because this was the covenantal name of God. This is the holy name of God. So when they were using Yahweh as the Lord lives, in other words, what he's calling them out is for hypocrisy. They weren't fair in their judgment. They weren't righteous in how they lived. But in every real estate deal, they would go, as the Lord lives, I promise to pay you back. So they would use the covenantal name of God in court. They would use it in the street when they're selling and vending fruit or whatever. Oh yeah, it's really a pound when it was 11 ounces. In other words, they said one thing. They used God's name to go along with their theft, their immorality. Okay, we can go, wow, those are really bad people, really? So we come to church and then we don't live as the Bible tells us to live when we go home. We're guilty of the exact same sin. We treat our neighbor, we treat our coworker, we treat our spouse, we treat our parent. We do the exact same sin. In other words, we say, as we sing in church, rightfully, we sing praises to God. We come to church, but how we talk to others is not as if God can hear us and His covenantal name. They say the Lord lives, they swear falsely. So there's two ways they would swear falsely. So they would swear falsely in the fact that they would say, I'll pay you back as the Lord lives, and never intend to pay back. But they would also swear falsely in that their lifestyle had nothing to do with how God had told the Jews to live. They worshiped Baal. They engaged in sexual immorality. They stole, the rich stole from the young. That's all through this period. So they not only directly lied, but their affirmation that God was their covenant God, yet they lived as if they were their own God. Wow. That sounds like America today, but more specifically, it sounds like the evangelical church today. We live as if we can live any way we want, say anything we want, do anything we want, but we'll still ascribe to, oh, I'm saved because I placed my faith in Jesus Christ. In other words, as the Lord lives, don't you wonder if God said this about Littleton, Colorado today, if He could really find anybody who seeks truth, executes judgment, and doesn't swear falsely? You guys are just like, man, I wish Pastor had his notes, because maybe, you know, this wasn't... I know I've gone from preaching to meddling, haven't I? That swear falsely, it's easy to say, well, I don't lie. But how do you live? Because of their use of Yahweh, they were saying, He is my covenant God, and that obligated them. So you remember when they go into the land of Israel, and half of the assembly was on Mount Gerizim, and half of them were on Ebal? Does anybody remember that story? And the people on Gerizim, and there's a valley between, and the thousands on Gerizim would say the covenant promises. And those on Ebal would shout back the consequences of disobedience. And then the ones here would shout out the covenant promises. And these would shout out the consequences of disobedience. Well, that's because Yahweh, so this covenant responsibility is an endemic to Yahweh, this name. So they use the name of their covenant God, but they refuse to take their responsibility in how they live. We take the name Christian, are we really a holy people? I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercy of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable act of worship. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove that which is acceptable and perfect will of God. So do we claim Christian? Do we do the same thing as they did? It's so easy for us to go, oh my goodness, how terrible they were. Then Jeremiah is going to talk about the people he went out and looked at. So he goes through Jerusalem and he gets to verse 3 and he uses the name Yahweh. He uses that same capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. He uses the same name. And he says, O Lord, covenant God, are not your eyes on the truth? You've stricken them, but they have not grieved. I talked about this last week in our culture, right? I mean, we're dealing with a pandemic that, depending on who you want to believe, in America has cost us close to 700,000 lives. We've had a hurricane that just came through and killed people. Flooded the major metropolitan areas of our country. We have drought in California. We, as I said, just lost a 20-year war to an 8th century barbarian clans, which, by the way, they are now all fighting amongst themselves, and there's a whole resistance because there's 30 different tribes in that country. It's not a Western democracy. And oh, by the way, you know, Europe had all its clans as late as 1600, right? The Holy Roman Empire was neither Holy Roman nor an empire. It was all a bunch of Germanic little clans with castles. All you got to do is go down the Rhine, and every other mile is another castle. Well, those were all little, teeny little clans. That's how Europe was. Afghanistan is no different than Europe 1,000 years ago. You know, this little teeny clans. Nation states have not risen yet. They don't think, the Pashtuns do not think of themselves as Afghanis. They think of themselves as Pashtuns. And honestly, it's a little bit like our country was before the Civil War. I mean, Robert E. Lee resigns his commission because he says, I'm a Virginian first. Right? So, our nation has lost a 20-year war. We have a pandemic. We have a drought. We have hurricanes. And is anybody repenting? Nobody. It's not even on their radar screen. He says, you've stricken them, but they have not grieved. You have consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than rock. They have refused to return. And I can put up one article after another. Governor Morris in Pennsylvania, John Adams. Their comments about, these are the signers of the Constitution, their comments on the Christian basis for the American experiment of being a republic. One of the quotes would be something like, a republic is only fit for a moral people. Why is that? Because a republic gives people freedom. And if people abuse their freedom because they're not moral, then the government has to put more laws and more laws and more laws, and people lose their freedom because people aren't a moral people. A republic can only survive with a moral people. An immoral people will demand a dictatorship. They will demand authoritarianism to control the crime and the theft and the abuses that go on. That's why a republic is only prospers when there are the value systems of a religious awakening, a spiritual awakening. Well, we had that in 1740 and 1750. We had that again in 1800. We had that again in 1850s. We had that again in the early 1900s of our country. But our country has not seen a religious awakening in over 100 years. That's the longest period of time our country has really gone without a religious awakening. And that's why we need to ask God, revive thy work in the midst of years. In judgment, remember mercy. Habakkuk's prayer. You know, they have refused to return. They don't recognize what you're doing. They refuse to recognize it. They have other explanations for it. And in their day, they went and worshiped Baal even more. So Baal is the god of sacrificing children. Baal is the god of prosperity, the god of abundance. We would call it, you know, the capitalistic god, right? The god of abundance, the god of prosperity. And they would hand their oldest child to Baal to burn. And Baal, the image, had arms outstretched like this, and you would lay your child on the arms, and the priest would pull on the lever behind, and the mouth of Baal is perpetual burning. They did this in the Valley of Hinnom, just outside of Jerusalem. And the priest would beat the drums to cover up the screams of the children. And the Baal priest would pull the lever and the arms would go up. And the child would roll into the burn and be incinerated. We are. And if you've watched in Texas, now that Texas has a fetal heart bill, and praise the Lord, our Supreme Court voted 5-4 not to murder children after they have a beating heart. What's shocking is that there were 4 bloodthirsty Supreme Court justices that wanted to continue a Holocaust on our children that makes Hitler and Stalin and Mao look like pikers as far as their brutality. You have 4 Supreme Court justices that are hell-bent, and I use the word very, very calculatedly, they are hell-bent on murdering children. And if you, I have different people I follow on Twitter. It's amazing how many people are so angry they no longer get to kill children in Texas. I mean, they are angry. We were talking about this, Dibbin and Alex and I and Elma were talking about this yesterday, and I said, you have to understand that in the secular religion of today, abortion is their sacrament. Now I need you to let that slip in. Think about that. So that's like telling a Baptist, and we don't call it sacraments, we call them ordinances, so I'm using the sacramental terminology. But you have to understand, what would it be like if you said to a Baptist, look, you can never observe the Lord's Supper, you can never be baptized. We would go, wait a second. We would have huge opposition to that. But when you understand that abortion is the ordinance, it's the sacrament of the new dominant religion amongst the American elite, which is secular humanism. So when you say you cannot murder children, that was what the Israelites did. This is exactly, Baal was a god that demanded your firstborn. It's interesting, I've been doing in my own worship time, reading through Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, and it's interesting that God, having Israel in that milieu, they had a firstborn. Remember, Passover was the death of the firstborn. This firstborn imagery is there. And what did he say? He said, your animal firstborn, the firstborn when a sheep gives birth the first time, you slaughter that lamb, and that's a sacrifice. I get your firstborn. I come first. This is why the tithe is off the first 10% of the gross. I get the firstborn. But the child in their pagan culture was also sacrificed. God says, your child is what? Does anybody know what the Jews did with their firstborn child? They redeemed it. So, yes, the firstborn child is God's, but we aren't going to kill the child to show our love for God. We will redeem it. So it was redeemed with a bull or a sheep or the flower. And here's what's interesting. You could do it with a dove, right? The abject poor, the most poverty-stricken Jew could have a child and you could redeem it with a dove, which was easy. You could capture it yourself, right, and redeem it with a dove. Now fast forward to the Gospels. When Mary goes to the temple and Joseph with Jesus, what sacrifice does Mary bring to redeem Jesus under the Mosaic law? What animal does she bring? So a sheep or an ox would represent a wealthier Jew or a middle class Jew. What's the animal that she brings? A dove. In other words, Jesus was born into the most abject poverty of the Jewish people. She brings a dove. She brings a dove. Jeremiah says they've not listened to you. They refuse to return and listen to his description of the leadership of America. Surely these are poor. They are foolish. For they do not know the way of the Lord. the judgment of their God. I will go to the great men. I mean, so the leaders don't know what they're doing. They're poor, but these are the wealthy guys. Mark Zuckerberg is poor. You are much richer than Mark Zuckerberg because you know the way of the Lord. Way richer. You're a lot wiser than Mark Zuckerberg. He's foolish. For they do not know the way of the Lord, the judgment of their God. I will go to the great men and speak to them, for they have known the way of the Lord, the judgment of their God. So I'm going to find other guys. And then he says about them, he went and talked to them, but they have altogether broken the yoke and burst the bond. So think yoke, it's what you tied oxen together so that you could plow a field, right? The yoke held the oxen. Then he said, they're like wild oxen who have broken the yoke and they've run away. They're good for nothing. They have no purpose. They've lost their purpose because their purpose is to glorify you, God, and they have broken their yoke. They have no interest. He says they burst their bonds. They have no purpose in life. The Mark Zuckerbergs of this world are brilliant people looking for purpose, but they have not known the way of God. Therefore, they're foolish and they're like oxen that have no real purpose because they've broken the yoke for which they were designed to glorify their Creator. And the list isn't just him. He's just one you would know. The list goes on and on. He says, therefore, here's the consequence. A lion from the forest shall slay them. Notice the three animals. A lion shall slay them, a wolf of the desert shall destroy them, a leopard will watch over the cities, everyone who goes out from there shall be torn in pieces, because their transgressions are many, their backslidings have increased. In other words, he's predicting Nebuchadnezzar will be as to them a lion, a wolf, and a leopard. So we'll stop at verse 6. I'm only four minutes over. So, George, I'm doing good. Like you said in Deacon's prayer meeting, I better be careful about setting a precedent. So, like, starting on time, finishing on time. Don't do that. That is comment or question, thought out of our adult Bible fellowship this morning. Thought, comment, question. it's recorded on live stream, so. Sure they do. Yep. So did Julius Caesar. So did Octavius Augustus. So did Caligula. So did Mao. So did Stalin. So did Lenin. So did Hitler. So did Henry VIII. Let's just be honest, for the same reason that we're going to see today in John chapter 8 and verse 44, Jesus looks at them and says, you are of your father. Can anybody fill in the blank? The devil. And here's what you're going to see in context. Are you ready? I'll preach my sermon before I preach it like I did to you, Divin. So here, the context is believers. The context of the passage today, this sharp discussion, is those believed on him. These are fake believers that believe on him and they push back against his further discipleship. And he looks at them and says, your profession is false. You are of your father the devil. That's a frightening thing when you think about who's in our evangelical churches today. John, go ahead. Okay. Yeah, a lot of people have gone to hell not having enough time. The fool has said in his heart, no God for me, right? And doesn't Jesus give us a parable of the man who tears down his barn? Right? Because he's been so successful in business. And he's got to build bigger barns. And what's God's comment to that fool? That's what does he say? Tonight? What? Tonight your soul is required of you. So, but in God's economy, right? We're talking about wealth, so let's talk economy. In God's economy, does it matter whether you die today or in 20 years? No. Only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ lasts. That's wisdom. The fool has said in his heart, eat, drink, and be merry. Yeah. Great, great thanks, John. Thank you for... That's how they all want to deal with it. I'll wait till I die. I'll wait till I'm about to die. But you may have a death car, a death plane, a death COVID. You may not, I mean, death heart attack, death stroke. I mean, Amos said to Israel, prepare to meet thy God.